Welcome to this episode of Christmas Punch, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your Lopez lovers, Kyle, joined by my, well, I would be joined by my co-host Tim. He's actually running a little late, which is awkward because this was pretty much a year that me and him have been doing this together, so I was very excited. We were finally going to talk about George Lopez. We're going to talk about the episode where Max is eavesdropping on a phone call where George and Andrea are discussing what to get Max for Christmas. And at that point, he starts to doubt Santa's existence. He gets beat up at school for still believing in Santa. In the end, George convinces him Santa's still real. And then, meanwhile, Carmen and Jason get back together and they start kissing and George doesn't approve. It takes a weird turn. But I was very excited. And like always, for a year now, we're not going to be able to talk about George Lopez, so we actually have a really good show instead. I'm very excited about this one. We're going to be talking to my favorite comic book podcast, which I've talked about a bunch. I don't listen to comic book podcasts because, like, most of them are just, like, reviews, and I don't fucking care about, like, reviews, and normally they're just, like, grumpy people talking about grumpy shit. One podcast I respect and love, and then two creators that I think are amazing and do great work just as creators are the Gutter Boys, JB and Cam. How are you guys doing? Thanks so much for joining me.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
No problem. Yeah, we were kind of talking before, Ricardo. Like, doing a comic book podcast, I don't listen to other ones because, like, it's just, like, an insight into, like, my anxiety and that mine's terrible. But like I used to do like years ago I used to do a weekly review show and it just became like staring into the void of like nothingness, like we're just talking about books and why this book sucks and this book doesn't suck, like I just don't want to listen to other people talk about comics because I generally just like there's very few takes or I don't know, I'm just the type of person, like, I'll go read it if it looks like something I like, so it's, like, kind of pointless, but I feel like you guys have a really unique perspective, obviously being kind of creators, but I think just kind of your general stance on comics and the comic industry, and then obviously kind of the really insightful interviews you guys do with guests, like, I think just, like, a whole package-wise, it's, like, kind of the smartest comic book podcast that I listen to, at least.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate that.
I think we're the dumbest comics
podcast. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. I mean, but that probably makes you the smart. But, like, I don't know. I mean, there's a few. Like, it's just, like, what... I mean, I guess that would be kind of the first question. Like, why, as creators, like, why start a podcast? And, like, what was... like your thought behind kind of how you guys wanted to approach it. Cause like for most, there's like literally just like shows that do the like reviews, the news, and then sometimes interviews, but like you guys kind of do a mix. But again, I think the interesting thing about it is like your guys like kind of insight and take on the industry itself. And then that kind of rolls over into the interviews, which is a lot of them are kind of like insight into the indie world, actually making comics and kind of the difficulty of that and where that kind of falls into the general discussion you guys kind of always have.
Cam, do you want to?
Yeah. As far as like, I don't even know why we started the podcast. I think we just like talked about it and it just happened. But I think that, it took us a little bit to kind of figure out, like, I feel like those first few episodes were us just talking, and, like, it kind of just, we didn't really find the format as far as, like, with guests and stuff for a while, but, it really, you know, like, to be honest, and, like, you know, with the comics podcasts that are out mainly, it is kind of, you know, we're not doing anything groundbreaking. You know, every show has interviews and every show has, you know, reviews and news, but it seems like everybody toes this corporate line or like, you know, tries to glamorize comics and they don't want to tell you the truth about it. But like working in the industry fucking sucks and there's nothing to really glamorize about it. And I think that's kind of what I guess sets us apart from everything else is we just refuse to like, you know, put the veil up, because everybody wants to appear successful, right? Everybody wants to, you keep up with the Jones on social media or whatever, but like, it's not how it is at all. Comics fucking suck. Like, not like, you know, I mean, obviously as cartoonists you love them, but like, the industry sucks. You know, there's no union, nobody has health care, you know, and you don't really see this kind of stuff, you know, broadcast on these shows, or I don't anyway.
Yeah, I mean, when we initially started talking about it, the initial idea was to have basically an excuse to shoot the shit and talk shop about comics, about making comics, about the different creators that we know and meet, interacting with fans, that kind of thing. But also, yeah, kind of like Cam said, pulling away the veil and being pretty blunt and honest about what it's like on the other side of the table, because I feel like a lot of these shows kind of ignore that. And I think also what differentiates our shows from other shows is that we actively make books and we're producing stuff, and you know, we've done the tabling stuff and we've self-published, we've been published, we know how that goes. And I feel like a lot of these other shows don't have that perspective, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but you don't get that other point of view about the actual making of the thing and what it's like selling these things and process and what have you. But and I think another big issue is that there weren't really, from my point of view, many shows that focused on small press. It was all mainly shows about the big two, maybe coverage about, you know, Image or Dark Horse or what have you, but it was predominantly just, you know, big cape books. And all the people that were doing those shows were also just fanboys. So when they talk about the talent and the books and the content and stuff like that, it's from that point of view that to me is like maybe too close as a fan to that subject to really be able to discuss it in any sort of meaningful manner. But yeah.
Yeah, and I think originally, even like, so like the original idea of the pages and panels was that kind of like, I was doing reviews for a few different comics media sites, and again, coming off doing like a weekly review show for, I don't know, like 3-4 years, and just like kind of the frustration of, kind of like you said, like there's the lack of understanding of the amount of work that goes into making comics. And so frequently, like, people pick up a comic book and are like, that sucks. Which, you know, there's a good possibility maybe it does suck, but like, there's more discussion to be had around that. And like, that is kind of obviously condescending, but also like dismissive of the amount of work that goes into it. And like, nobody sets out to make a bad thing unless you're like Rob Liefeld making Snake Eyes, but
that shit rules. It is bad, it's so bad, but I just love that Rob refuses to change. Like, Rob's kind of my boy for that.
I go back and forth on it, because it is like, he's been in this how long, and like, he's yet to figure out how to actively lay out a fight scene that makes any coherent sense. It makes, like, from panel to panel, it makes no fucking sense what's going on in that.
Right.
But again, it's kind of like, you know, what we were talking about earlier, like, that's a big dick move. Like, he can fucking do what he wants, and there's like 40 different covers, and like, apparently people buying it. Like, but like, I just get like real frustrated, and I wanted to get like, to be able to talk to creators and just like get that expression out of like, how much work like, people are putting into these fucking comic books. And like, a majority of the people you talk to, like, often this is like a second job. A lot of people are teachers. Like, a lot of people, like, this is like a fucking passion project. And like, it can be generally dismissive in the general, I think, population of comic readers who are doing the big two, or at this point big three, because like, I don't feel like Image is inherently indie anymore. Like, it is in a sense, but like, I don't know. It's just another big one. I mean, it's just
like, yeah. It's like Burger King, McDonald's, and Wendy's. You know, the presence is everywhere in the industry. You know, it's you know, one might be bigger than the other. you know, but arguably, I mean, Image is an independent publisher, I guess, in the sense of you get to own your own creations. But I mean, as far as like, you know, having a presence, I feel like, yeah, there pretty much is a big three.
Yeah, I was like shocked that they published Hedra this year and Planet Paradise from Jesse Lonergan.
Was the magazine book? I think I bought that with like the spaceship.
Yeah, like okay, so he like originally published it on like Newstock, this huge fucking thing, which I bought and I regretted buying because I loved it. It's beautiful, but I don't know, I don't fucking know where I'm gonna put that. It doesn't fit on my shelf anywhere. And then he released it, in the magazine size. But like that felt like classic, like Image, like almost like kind of before, I don't know, maybe before like Saga, where they were at least doing the work to kind of find and being an avenue for creators. And now it still feels like kind of a just a gateway or avenue to like TV or the big two.
I mean, the main people handling those projects, the ones that they're pushing anyways, I mean, you look at Image, you know, put so much money marketing behind that new Donny Cates book, but they don't market their other books at all, you know. So it's almost like all these like Marvel and DC guys, they just go there and Image just kind of takes the money and, you know, puts it into those people and not the people making interesting books.
I mean, that kind of tracks, though, considering the history of Image, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, kind of like what we were just discussing, you know, with, like, that book feeling more, you know, Image as far taking a risk. I feel like that's kind of dying with them.
I agree. But I think, for the most part, if you just look at the timeline of Image from, you know, its very initial beginnings to today, you can't really be too surprised at that.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Trajectory, you know.
No, and I mean, again, I know we've said that a bunch. Like, I don't know how business works. I do know, like, you know, I work nonprofit, but I think often we'll take like my department, like I wanted to start this new day program for people with traumatic brain injuries. And like, so that was going to be like, you know, for a while, like a sunk cost, like it's going to be like lose money to make it. But so I spent forever building up this like case management agency. So there was like an influx of money there. So then like kind of like, you know, trickle down economics is actually supposed to work. But like, I feel like that's like with Image, like they bring, I mean, how much fucking money do they make from like, you know, Walking Dead, Saga, like all that stuff. And like, they bring it in that way. And then other books get absolutely no like PR press. And like, it's still, even then, like it's still an industry where as the creator, you are like inherently in charge of promoting your book, which seems fucking crazy that like, you do all the work to make it, and then you got to sit on it, and then you have to go out and be like, you know, here's when like the FOS is out. Like, you got to do all the fucking work on Twitter if you're not on there every day, like letting people know here's what I'm drawing. Like, it's just like, it's like a 24-hour job for like penance, like for nothing. And there's these, you know, publishers that are not doing anything to back it up, which is crazy.
Yeah, and that whole time you're not making any money either. Like, you're not getting a penny.
Well,
from
especially
it
until, and that's
they,
like,
you know, meet that threshold.
Yeah, they've got to make their money back. I think it's like a set fee per book, and then from what I've heard, yeah. And then but
yeah,
you know,
and then after that, it's a percentage. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've heard horror stories that, like, you know, if anything,
you can
legal
owe
comes
Image
up,
money.
Yeah, you can owe Image money. I mean, you look at Rich Tommaso. That's why he can't make any
perfect
more books.
Example.
Owes Image too much money, and you know, and that's public knowledge. That's, you know, he went on the record saying that, you know, I don't want people to listen to this if that's their first time hearing that, thinking I'm trying to, you know, smear that dude. But you know, and then also, you know, if for some reason something comes up, like legal issues, Image will bill that to your book. Like, I've heard of shit like that happening.
Oh,
so it's pretty weird. You know, it's a weird business model that, you know, you can succeed at, but, you know, like you said, you have to pretty much promote everything yourself. And at that point, you know, outside of the distribution, what's really Image doing for you? You know, you might as well just be packing up orders and fucking making more money and doing
right.
it yourself.
Right. And there's plenty of independent publishers out there, maybe not at the same scale as Image, but are doing effectively the same thing. You own everything that you create, and you know they help distribution, working through other distributors like Diamond or whatever, to make sure that your book gets into people's hands. But they're not. I mean, at least they're actively promoting your work. You know, like at least they're talking about it and trying to get people to check out the book. Whereas, you know, with Image, you're basically just kind of shouting into the void on social media, hoping that that's going to generate sales for them.
Yeah, this is the first year, and I've been doing, you know, these interviews either through the podcast or through Multiversity or like other places. It's like the first year I've like done a lot of my interaction with like managers or like PR. I don't say firms because usually it's like one or two people, but like, which I think is good. Like there is someone like kind of, I mean, again, you have to pay them, but like they're actively out there like kind of fighting for it. And these are like kind of the smaller books, either being self-published or like something through like Scout or Source Press or something like that. So it's been nice to see, at least in that sense. Again, like the fact that you have to go out and do that is crazy, but I mean, it's to that point. And I guess I had come up with like a few questions kind of like year end for you guys, and kind of where everything was, obviously, like, you know, pandemic wise and like early on the kind of shutdown of Diamond and kind of where that was all going. And I don't know if it's really fixed it at all. I know the DC distribution's kind of fucking weird and a mess still. What was your guys' kind of like biggest takeaway, maybe not from the year, but kind of that aspect of things? I was excited, and I think I'm still a little bit excited. Like we talked, like I'm actively looking for independent books, small books, people who are publishing their own books on Etsy and, you know, Gumroad and stuff like that. But it's really fucking hard, and like there's so many out there and there's so many good stuff, and there's no like easy way to do it because, you know, distributors like Diamond, or I mean, I know specifically Diamond, like they are very strict about what they're letting in. I co-host on the Patreon show. I do like you have to send in, you know, your Twitter followers, you have to send in like what your ratio on this, and like they won't even consider it if you're not like someone who's got a significant following. So just, it's frustrating me as like even a reader and a fan, is like I want good books, but like I have to, like, you know, I have to spend a majority of my time sitting on Twitter and Instagram to kind of find things that, like, you know, all these other publishers are hiding from me, because I can't fucking get my hands on it, and instead I gotta read Crossover and stuff like that.
So, are we, like, as far as, like, distribution, are you mainly wanting to get into, like, you know, thoughts on Diamond, or, like, as far as, like, small press distribution?
No, I think he's asking about the 2020 year as a whole with COVID and everything, and how that's affected distribution. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, originally I kind of just wanted, like, was asking you, like, kind of your big takeaway from that, but, like, leading into kind of a little bit of what we're talking about as, like, you know, people, especially you guys who a lot of it doing self-published and pushing it yourself. I mean, like, is there anything you took away from the year in that? And it seems like it's almost, I was really excited that it seemed like it might change, and now it seems like it just is going back to the way it was.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my local comic shop, I go out once a week with the pandemic. I get groceries and I pick up from my comic shop on Wednesdays. And my comic shop doesn't like feel different. As far, it seems like they've always got the same titles. I don't think they really have any kind of hiccups with like receiving from DC. So like as a consumer, I'm not really seeing any kind of change. Now, as far as like the business side of things, I mean, I didn't really think this DC leaving Diamond thing was going to stick too long. I mean, they've left Diamond before and went back. I mean, I know they're still gone from them right now, but, you know, I they're going to go back sooner than later, I think. Just because Diamond has such a stranglehold on the industry, but anything that throws a wrench in their plans and, you know, potentially opens up an avenue for more distributors to get involved is a win for comics, in my opinion. So, you know, I would hope that that doesn't happen. I just am not optimistic about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was initially pretty excited to, I mean, for the lack of a better term, to see where this would all lead to. And if it did mean that there would be some major structural changes to how distribution works, and hopefully tearing down the monopoly that Diamond has basically presided over for the last, what, two decades now? So, yeah, I think initially when going into the peak of the pandemic, I guess, initially those early stages of the pandemic, a lot of our episodes were really discussing what that meant for comics and how it was going to impact it, whether it be positive or negative. And one of the things that constantly kept coming up in the news cycle was Diamond and the Big Two deciding on switching over to different distributors. We can only talk about this stuff as creators rather than, say, retailers. Like, if we owned a comic shop, our opinions might be different. That being said, from my point of view, I think it's good that something like Diamond doesn't have a stranglehold over the marketplace. And even if there are growing pains during that transition, which I think it should be expected with any major change, I think that that leads to a lot of opportunities to explore to maybe improve this sort of completely outdated model of distribution for comics.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know. We also, and then you saw like the explosion of Kickstarter, which again was, I feel like it is a good avenue for that, and it's, I mean, it's at least for comics, it's been one of the continued mainstays. I think like games and other aspects of Kickstarter have kind of died off a bit as, you know, a lot of those projects failed or did not, you know, come together. But I feel like comics has figured out kind of generally being able to fund and distribute through that. And then obviously there's the kind of like weird things where like Boom is, you know, using that as an avenue to kind of like test waters on stuff. But even that, it seems like it is kind of, and I thought that was, again, a kind of a good thing. Like the Keanu stuff is what it is, but I felt like if that got like one person to like find out what Kickstarter is, cause I still like, I feel like it is a weird concept, I think, to the general public. Like, oh, I give you money and maybe like in February you give me a product. I don't fucking understand that. Like, so if it gets one person to like try it and it works and then they come back, then that was a good route. But, and I think we've still seen an increase. I was just on there today backing some books, and like, it feels like there's more on there, but I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, sexy books on there, but that's normal for Kickstarter.
Well, I mean, I've always felt that, you know, kind of going back to that point about how with Kickstarter, the platform, all the other things, like you said, like video games and other things, other projects that people are putting up there, comics are one of those things that keep happening that always, almost always at least, get funded or the most visible on Kickstarter. And I think that's largely because of how poor the way comics are published and distributed is to begin with, you know? So like something like this fundraising platform, which was never really intended as sort of a different way of taking pre-orders for something that already exists, but rather showing you a project that they want to work on but can't and need people to help fund it to make it, you know, a reality. That has kind of gone to the wayside. It's now more just, here's this thing that we already have completed, and now this is just a way for us to get some press. And then through that press, we'll hopefully be able to get it through an actual publisher, which is fine. But again, I think that just points to the major issues that already exist within the comic industry.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and even much like I feel like Image is a kind of gateway to, you know, a lot of, at this point, I feel like, you know, I don't want to say that because, again, I don't like talking super negatively. Like, I, again, people are setting out to create things. But like sometimes it feels like a pitch project for, you know, a TV show or a movie or something like that. Or also just kind of like a condensed project of someone, like you said, kind of, you know, at the big two wanting to tell a different story, and, you know, they kind of get carte blanche to do that. But it also just feels like a, like, image at times going like, oh, this was like really successful on Kickstarter. I guess we'll, why don't we make some money? We'll sell that as well. And you kind of saw that with Hedra this year, where again, he, the success he had of it, essentially having to prove that to then get it, them to redistribute it. And then, oh, hey, that did well. I guess we'll, I guess it's worth funding your other book that you've already made on Patreon that other people have paid for you to make. And now I guess we'll make some money off it. Why not?
And I think there's some examples of that where, like, a book that does get funded and then gets picked up by a publisher, the people that backed the initial project won't get the actual book before the people that can actually go and buy it from a comic shop, from the publisher, or from, you know. And that seems a little shady to me.
Yeah, like, that sucks.
If you're the person that's initially funding it, and that's the only reason why anybody knows about it, let alone it getting picked up by a publisher, shouldn't they get the product first?
Well, I feel like that's, and two people I love in comics more than anything are Dave and Alexis, and I feel like that's them trying to like skate that line really closely with Floating World and what's the book, Night Hunters.
Oh yeah, their new book. Yeah,
yeah. I think it kind of looked like Night Hunters was going to hit first before backers were going to get it. And I don't care. Like, I get it when I get it, but I feel like, yeah, like you said, that's kind of a tough line to navigate. And then it's also like, again, I feel like that's, you know, a tough thing to do as well, to have to run a Kickstarter when you have a publisher lined up. But I mean, whatever the fuck, if you have to sacrifice a goat to get more Alexis art, that's fine. I don't fucking care.
I think that book comes out this week, right? Doesn't that come out soon? Alexis' new book?
Does it?
I think so.
I don't know if it comes out this week.
I think the backer email said they were going to be sending him out soon, so I don't know when it drops for, like, the direct market. I know they got them in hand, and I think they were sending them out to backers, so they might have just, like, lined it up perfectly, but I don't know. That seems like a lot of work. I have no even concept or understanding how you figure any of that stuff out.
Yeah, I'm gonna do a Kickstarter for the first time in the spring. So, I've never actually done anything on there myself. So it's gonna be a little interesting to see how that all works. But we do have a lot of
nudie covers.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, I think it's a good thing overall for independent creators, because, you know, as long as you've got the majority of the project done, you know, it gets people, you know, money right away, as opposed to waiting for a book to sell. And when I say money, I mean as far as like paying your creators, you know, because that's very important, you know, and it kind of sucks having to wait, you know, months after you've logged hundreds of hours into drawing a book, you know, to get any kind of paycheck for it. So, you know, all in all, I think for the creators, Kickstarter's great, though. As far as like publishers using it, I am like really against like the Keanu thing. Like, I thought that was bullshit personally. Mm-hmm. I think we discussed that on our show, though. They should have the resources to, Boom should have the resources to publish that comic, you know, without having to kickstart it. Now, I get why they did it, but at the end of the day, like, that massive amount that they pulled in, you know, how much of that is actually going to go back towards comics and not just, you know, more of the same bullshit? Like, I'm sure they're already trying to look for other deals with actors and whatnot to try to capture that lightning in a bottle again. And I don't know, I'm just not a fan of that.
I mean, I'd imagine a lot of the money that they raise is probably just going to go to Keanu, right?
Well, I mean, couldn't have been cheap. He couldn't have, that's one thing, but I mean, that book was already pretty much done and solicited, so I mean, like, you would think that they'd squared away, you know, his payday already.
I don't know, it's Boom, man.
Yeah.
Didn't they have a whole Didn't a whole different artist come in
on that book? That?
Yeah, I think originally it was something I was looking forward to, and I don't remember who came in and took over.
No, I didn't follow it close enough to know that. Sorry.
I think it was, yeah, it was either like behind on schedule. I don't know what it was, but yeah.
It's probably the because they were offering that cool $25 a page.
Is that what the,
yeah, is that what it was? Golden.
I'm just saying, if somebody offered me, you know, if a big publisher offered me $25 a page, I would be a little late on my deadline too.
Yeah. Boom doesn't exactly pay well for page rates.
Yeah, not at all. Like, and this like, you can look it up. It's like common knowledge, it's like
pretty
in
bad
the industry, like really bad, like horrible.
Well, especially if you're like, I can imagine being like, all right, 25, and obviously in itself that's insulting, but like, all right, let me get this script. Let me look through this. Let me do some thumbnails. Oh, co-written. Was that? That's not the Keanu Reeves. You're paying me $25 a page.
Yeah.
For a book by Keanu Reeves, which is like just printing. I mean, and again, Boom, you know, fucking the Power Rangers, which I enjoy the whatever the year one stuff, but like that's just fucking printing money at that. Like they sell boxes that are just like, you know, you get a random cover in it for $150 or whatever.
Do they really?
Yeah, they were selling, I think they were at the local, whatever they call that, comic book store day or,
oh, okay.
There was like a blind box for the hardcover editions they put out, and it was like a special cover, and I don't even know if you were guaranteed. I think you might have been guaranteed. I don't know. That would seem real shitty. I wouldn't put it past, but like, which I shouldn't, Boom people on all the time, but whatever. Yeah, I mean, that's the benefit of no one listening to the show. No fuck cares. But yeah, they were doing stuff like that, you know. So there's like, you know, it's one of those series where there's, you know, 15 different covers, and like anytime I see that, I do, like, you can, like, you're not doing that because that's like a guarantee that you know you're making money if you can afford to do 15 different covers for a book. Like, you wouldn't pay 15 cover artists $100 a cover or whatever it is to do that if you weren't making money.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's another thing too with the industry as a whole, is how is it that cover artists get more money than people that do pages?
Oh, I don't, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't make,
that doesn't
any
make any sense
to me
at all.
Like, what is that?
Yeah, and well, and I mean, you know, a lot of these variants are paid for by the shops in theory, right? Don't they order like 10,000 copies and they get to like solicit a variant cover? Isn't that like how, I don't know if that's the exact number, but isn't that how that works?
I'm pretty sure, because one of mine and Tim's fascinations is Comic Tom. I don't know if you're familiar.
No, it's
Comic Tom. So there's this guy. He has a YouTube channel. He owns a shop. I don't know the name of the shop. But he does, like, weekly, like, you know, hottest comic books. Like, you know, what to invest in. What's, you know, what prices are going up and down and all that stuff. But he has, like, a deal with Scout where he gets, like, Comic Tom variants. So that must be how it works. I think you, like, pay into it or something like that. I don't know. Like, so he had, like, a Peach Momoko variant or something. And, like, now one of his other like YouTube lackeys, this like Gem Mint guy who does like statue reviews and other, I don't know. So like he has one now through Dynamite, and it's like you pre-order it on Indiegogo. I don't fucking know. It's this like whole fucking racket. But like clearly, like, at that point, if some like guy with like geek glasses has his own variant, that must be how it works. I don't know. I don't, it seems crazy.
Well, quick question, going back, yeah. Peach Momoko, has anybody ever seen that person in real life?
I don't know. It's like, I mean,
that has some serious Akira Yoshida vibes going on off the name Peach Momoko. Like, I keep seeing that artist's name and I'm like, that sounds like a fake name.
They put out a lot of covers. Yeah, maybe it's like a, I don't know, maybe it's fucking like an AI that they've taught how to make covers. I'm sure that wouldn't be, at some point they'll just teach AI to write comics and then you don't have to worry about it. For you guys, I mean, we kind of talk about like what, as creators, and then again also as like podcasters, like, I enjoy that you guys kind of, you know, start off talking about kind of the news and again how that affects you guys as creators, also the industry, and then leading that into the interviews. Is there been anything positive you've taken away from the year, at least in the industry, whether it even is just kind of like personal stuff with you guys as creators and how that's affected you?
As someone who, like, I feel like a lot of cool creators got to make a lot of work this year. Not saying they wouldn't have worked normally, but I feel like the pandemic understandably makes a lot of people stay home, and I think that some cool comics have been made. I mean, there's been some cool, like, daily stuff, like the Simon Hanselman daily comic. There's, you know, Leslie Stein's doing that daily comic. So I think in that aspect where, you know, the pandemic has given creators more time to work, so there's more cool content available, you know, I guess that's an upside to it.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
is there any, like, positive takeaway for you in the industry this year? And I'm sure that, again, I think the positive thing, I think there was a lot of good books that came out here. Is there anything, like, overall you've noticed, at least positively, in the industry this year?
I would have to just repeat what Cam said in terms of, like, giving creators more time and the space to actively make more work. Because I feel like a lot of creators are usually on the road, which, you know, for me, that's a minus, because I actually do like doing shows. It's one of the few times out of the year that I can actually, you know, interact with friends that I don't see normally. Positives. I don't know, man. I can't really see too many positives, to be perfectly honest with you. other than giving people more time or more of an easy excuse to not have to socialize or go out and, you know, kind of force themselves to work constantly.
Yeah, because, I mean, even with, like, the books that got published, I mean, comics shut down for, like, I feel like 2 months. You know, Diamond shut down, and that crippled a lot of stores, you know. In addition to, like, local regulations, if some weren't even allowed to open. But a lot of books did come out that were good, but, I mean, I feel like, you know, as a whole, it was a wash.
Yeah, and those good books would have come out anyway if there wasn't a global pandemic.
Yeah, true, because they would have been, you know, worked on last year, you know, and whatnot, as far as getting them ready. But, I mean, you know, all in all, I think for creators, it was good in a morbid way. You know, you got time to do your shit and not feel bad about it, or not, you know, have to balance going to work for 8 hours and then coming home and, you know, having to draw for 3 or 4, go to sleep, you know, for 6 hours, get up and do it again. I feel like a lot of people got to just kind of stay home and create, and that is a positive. But, you know, as far as the industry, I don't know if this was a banner year for it.
Yeah, which, even, I mean, if you want to take an industry and, like, if you want to look at the positives, and, again, I feel like that's kind of, you know, what I've taken away, again, is kind of I've had time to find more independent stuff and stuff I maybe wouldn't have had time to kind of stumble upon, or, you know, really make the effort to kind of look for the things I want to look. And those books kind of were able to publish because they weren't relying on, you know, kind of Diamond distribution or stuff like that. But, like, if that's your positive, that's almost like a symptom of, like, shit's broken in the industry, where, like, the positive is, like, oh, people actually have time to, like, create things, which itself, but
yeah, like, it doesn't pay you enough to where you normally can do this. And that's just, you know, yeah, like you said, it's just, if anything, shows another hole in our industry.
It's it's the same way of how Kickstarter is positive.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Like, it is positive, but no, go ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah,
no, right. I was just saying, like, the all the things that we see as positives with Kickstarter are really baseline and just kind of point to how much needs to change in the industry by and large. Because it's a good way to get new workout. If you are just getting into it and it's a project that you know maybe won't, you know, reach a larger audience, but I mean, you just don't invest that much time and effort and work on something and then go and do something like a Kickstarter because, I don't know, you don't know the right editor or whatever to get a book published by whoever, which you won't make any money on anyway. So, I don't know. But yeah, that's the little amount of money you can make on Kickstarter, I feel like that shows you how bad things are.
Yeah, that's why you gotta wait for the editors to tweet out that they're looking for artists. That's where the real money is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like, I mean, even just in general, like kind of in the, so like this, you know, since March or whatever, had been working from home as the office job. And like, I've been working this whole time cause you know, I'm an essential worker. And so like I do case management and stuff and like, but they were like, you know, you work from home, we'll get you, you know, phones and anything you need. And it was like this slow realization in the company and stuff like I've been saying for a while is like, you know, obviously people don't need to work 40 hours a week. People are happy if you give them freedom. I don't fucking need to be at an office and sit there and do nothing. Like I just sit on YouTube when I'm there. Like I can do that at home and still do my job. Like, to the point where now, like, they don't even know, like, when we're coming back to the office and stuff like that. And, like, a slow realization of people, like, realizing that, like, oh, fuck, the system is broken. And at least the benefit of a nonprofit job is, like, most of those people skew, I think, left. So it kind of reaffirms some stuff. So maybe they'll learn things. But, like, again, all the positive I've experienced this year are all, like, positives that are based out of showcasing the general negatives that we've been experiencing for years, that other people are now just like, oh, wow, that makes sense, I guess. But are you, because for you guys, and this is something, again, a lot of the show I had showcased early on, like, less, I always feel bad, like, having guests and, like, asking it, but, like, for you guys as creators, and, again, making a show, we were talking earlier, like, again, even the misconception of a pocket, like it's some amount of work. I have to like edit it and stuff like that, even the bare minimum. You guys are working jobs and everything outside of the lucrative career of comics?
I don't think.
Normally, yes, but.
Normally, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but during the pandemic, we've both been unemployed, so been chilling at home.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, I've been living off of unemployment, you know. But that ends in like 2 weeks for me, so
that's surprising
that it's ending.
Yeah, that soon.
Oh, it's like I thought the bill is only signed till December 31st because I'm on like pandemic assistance or whatever. Mm-hmm. So
is that the extra six?
No, that was only for like 2 months. Yeah. Until like June or whatever. But like because I don't have a W-2 normally, as of right now, since I left my corporate job over a year ago, I'm considered an independent contractor.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, the pandemic unemployment assistance or whatever that independent contractors get, you know, whether you're an artist or, you know, I was doing gig work, like walking dogs off WAG when the pandemic hit. So that with art is, I guess, you know, I don't have a W-2 necessarily, so whatever that was paying normal contracted gig workers or whatever, that ends on the 31st.
Okay, that makes more sense then. Yeah, reason I've thought that your unemployment would be longer because of your old job, but you left that job before the pandemic, so yeah.
Yeah, and I quit it, so.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
That's something me and Tim have discussed, kind of looking into and doing actual, the barest amount of journalism that you could do. But I've always been inherently interested because of my normal job is based in like Medicaid, and you know, prior to what I do now, I worked in the city with like lower income people on Medicaid, trying to keep them on it, get on it, and it was just general like kind of case management for lower income people. And so a lot of that was just like problem solving, and that's continued through kind of whatever population I've worked with, like, you know, duly diagnosed, like mental health, substance abuse, stuff like that. So like there's like in comics itself, is there like a, not a support group, that's a poor word. Is there like an avenue or a kind of collective for you guys to kind of understand that, like, what is available to you as artists, creators? Because, again, I mean, I think most people, if they're not, like, again, like, a lot of it's kid work, a lot of it's, you know, you guys aren't, you know, part of companies, like, so there's almost no safety net for you guys a lot of times. Is that something that is discussed a lot, or is there kind of a lot of resources to you guys to understand, like, the things available to you, or is that, again, something as a creator you just are understanding, you're taking on all that on your own and, you know, figure it out as you go?
I think it's assumed that you kind of know that going into it, that you are basically okay with not having healthcare because we live in a broken country. So,
yeah.
You know,
I think in America, you know, that's the answer. But I mean, you know, you look at European countries and even Canada.
Yeah, Canada is a different story. Yeah.
They, you know, actually care about the arts and, you know, funding those. So you're able to, you know, make these projects with grants from the governments and other places that, you know, allow you to live while, you know, doing these, you know, funny books. Whereas America, it's just like, eh, you know.
Yeah. Go greatest die country of a in the world, disease. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. That's why you get so many Simon Roy books and Ed Breeson. You get all that money. Get out there.
Well, it's just one of those things, too, that I never really understood. It reminds me a lot of, like, wrestlers, because as a wrestler, you are also an independent contractor. You have no health care. You have no benefits. You have nothing guaranteed to you in terms of, like, your financial welfare, long term, at least. And yet so many of these people are, like, not only okay with it, but are actually, like, game for that. Like, they think that's a good thing, and that's like just another trait of how great America is.
Yeah,
which is just the totally, like, that's insane to me. Like, that is Stockholm syndrome to a T.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
Yeah, that's the American ideal, that you earn it, you take it on. That, again, they're not the ones screwing you. You're screwing yourself. Like, bullshit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it comes down to the individual in terms of responsibility.
Yeah. And that's what I mean.
But I mean, we're also seeing how that worked with the pandemic, and that clearly just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that is a good thing about the pandemic as well, is I feel like it did put like a big focus on the holes of how it works. I don't think anything's going to like dramatically change or anything like that, but I think there's at least a discussion now that people weren't willing to have before this happened.
Right.
And that was that again, kind of the hopes as things were happening. And I think you kind of saw that this year as well, with a lot of the kind of the continuation of the Me Too movement and a lot of the like shitty people being outed or not even outed, like people who had been outed a while ago and other people just figuring that out, that there is no, again, there's no like HR department. There's no place for you guys to file grievances or really have any avenue of support. So that was just something like, obviously hoping, and again, it's, there's no real hope, but like that's, there is an entity or a situation where, you know, comic creators, again, people who are making something that, you know, you look at what they make in movies now is the biggest form of entertainment. But the people who are actually creating those things are, you know, fucked outside of that. So having some sort of entity that can, you know, if you need help filling out Medicaid application in your city, or, you know, you need this avenue for like that, and like, That was something I was thinking as everything was happening. But again, that's probably nothing that will ever happen.
Yeah, I don't think that comics is ever going to unionize or anything like that and have, like, an HR department, anything like that. I guess, like, that's the only reason why I would see it's acceptable to try to, you know, get into Hollywood through comics is just so you can get on that badass guild plan. Because I just don't ever see comics has too many opposing forces that, like, comics can't get on the same page, I feel like, to make something like that happen. There's too many cooks in the kitchen and too many, like, naysayers in positions of power to, you know, shut that down. And I just think it's unfortunate. But, I mean, I guess kind of going back to, you know, JB's original answer as well to, you know, that this is just something you sign up for being an artist or, you know, I mean, even, you know, any kind of contractor, I guess, in America.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah. Just sign up for as an American.
Well, yeah. And like going back on Cam's point, there is a lot of the people that control the major publishers are, strictly speaking, not interested in paying their talent when they don't have to. And so there's already a kind of precedence set in that industry where that's okay. That's seen as responsible and normal. And so, of course, as a result, I don't really see unions being a reality anytime soon. But I think that's also, I mean, if we want to take the microscope off of comics and just kind of take a step back and look at the country by, like, as a whole, it's an issue nationwide with practically every industry for the most part. And so it's shameful, but it's also like, what do you expect in America? You know,
like, yeah, like, just, what can you do about it other than, you know, just deal with it,
right? Because otherwise you're just going to outsource it. I mean, they're already doing that now. They're just going to lean into it even more if unions ever become a reality in the industry. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I mean, and yeah, and at that point, it's a top-tier problem, something that, you know, working down isn't going to matter to work up. But obviously, I don't want to doom and gloom you guys.
I mean,
and you don't have to. And,
yeah, but, I mean, not to make it as doomy and gloomy, there is potential for growth and change, I think. And it can't happen.
Yes,
absolutely. It can't happen from the bottom up. But I think the problem is that too many people that do this industry or really work in any industry are, one, too indoctrinated by ideology, where they are in that individualist mindset of I'm responsible for me and me alone, and I gotta, you know, pull myself by my bootstraps and work harder, and that's how I'll succeed despite all these things constantly being thrown at me day to day. That's more of like a cultural issue.
Yeah, it's a symptom of, especially, again, I mean, you do the work. I mean, a lot of people start from that position and they work up, and then, like, they're the people who have the new position or the power and, like, are using it to, you know, thank the people working on Black Friday and shit like that. So, I mean, it's using it, like, making your way up and then using it is another thing. I don't think we've seen a lot of that, but
I mean, again, I think there is a glimmer of hope, just because even before the pandemic, leading into 2020, the fact that you had someone like Bernie Sanders being able to even be in the conversation and being in the running for potentially, you know, winning the DNC nomination, which, and again, he's not a radical leftist or anything. Like, he's pretty fairly center left for the most part. I mean, his politics aren't insane.
Right. People think they are, but
people think they are, but that's because you compare them to what's been going on in the country for the last 60 years.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like, we can look at Reagan talking about, certain topics that, if you, you know, put that in the same setting or put that in today's setting, would be seen as quote unquote liberal. You know, I think that just shows that there's like a, the, what is it? The parameters of dialogue and discussion in this country has slowly shrunken and moved more towards the right. And that's been going on for a very, very, very long time. And so that's why we are in the predicament that we are in now, where there is no security net to take care of the people that need to, you know, that need assistance, that need the whole reason why we live in a government should be so that we get something from the government, right? Like, why would we have all of these institutions running, and why would we have government in the first place if they're not going to do anything for us to begin with? Like, what's the point of this other than what, paying taxes once a year? Like, that is that it? And if you're a contractor, you got to pay it two times a year technically. But it's insane. It's absolutely insane. But again, going back to, I think there was a glimmer of hope. The fact that a guy like Sanders was very much potentially going to become the next DNC nominee, that's I think a good thing in terms of like showing you where the larger voting population is. There's a lot more people being more aware of like what their material wealth is, or what they actually have access to, and how much of that is actually just sequestered away by this very, very, very small minority of people that have no interest in anything but continuing to grow their wealth. And you see that like in the comic industry. Sorry, go
like
ahead.
Fox exit polls. You saw it like in those kind of like exit polls. Fox News was running, where like, you know, even that, the majority of people want, you know, they want to be taken care of. They want the government to help them and things like that. And it's just, and slowly that. But I mean, luckily we have the radical liberal Joe Biden in, so we'll be okay.
Right.
I'll be doing my, smoking my weed and getting my Medicare card any day now.
Yeah. I saw that he got hurt because he pulled his dog's tail while he was getting out of the shower or something. Like, you can't make that shit up. Yeah. Like, but, you know, hey.
Yeah. So, for positive stuff for you guys, and I don't want to, like, put you on the spot. You don't have to, like, you know, go into, like, full in-depth stuff. But what were some of your, you know, favorite books that did come out this year?
Yeah, I'll let Cam go with that because he's going to have a bigger list.
I mean, I mentioned him earlier, but I really do think that the Simon Hanselman webcomic was, I mean, he pretty much posted every day since, like, what, April or May? And, like, the comic is playing out like as the pandemic progresses. So it's just very on the nose and in the moment. And I think that's been like a really, as far as like reading things online, I know it's getting collected into a book, but that's been a benefit of the pandemic. Cause I feel like that comic coming out, the Megan Mogg stuff. I really like the Yoshiharu Shige books that came out from Drawn and Quarterly and New York Review Comics. I'm really into that like 60s era Garo manga stuff, so any kind of reissues like that that come out, I just snatch them up. And the guy that translates all those, Ryan Holmberg, he's like translated like 20 something books, I guess, maybe more, maybe a little less, but it's usually pretty good stuff. And he'll do like an essay that explains, like, you know, about the cartoonist, and a lot of this stuff is like, you know, 60s manga, you know, artists in Japan, you know, working in like this thankless fucking industry, and they were making indie comics, you know, they weren't being published by these like big magazines, so it's like even worse, you know, hearing about how they were just living in poverty and drinking themselves into early deaths, you know, from being depressed in some cases. But, you know, kind of morbid, but, you know, I like that whole era of, you know, comics that kind of seems to be kind of coming out in the past few years. I mean, I guess we had these people on our show, but I mean, you know, Pete Fakey put out a comic with Drew Lerman that was really good. I mean, we just spoke with a dude named Evan Salazar who put out a second issue of a comic called Rodeo that was incredible. Yeah, Pettinger did Goiter number five, which is, you know, like a modern day 8 Ball. who Caleb Arecchio did Pop Off. That was a fun book.
Mm-hmm.
M.S. Harkness, Desperate Pleasures. Like, those are all our friends, so, like, it kind of feels like, you know, I'm just plugging them. But, I mean, it's, I think I'm very fortunate to have, you know, my peers making some of my favorite work. JB put out, you know, Daikaiju, Alpha Team. You know, JB's one of my favorite cartoonists. I mean, stuff that he hasn't even published yet that's coming out in anthologies. You know, that's some of the best work I've seen him do, you know, and it's just, it sounds like I'm just trying to, you know, gas up the team, but I mean, it's just, I just really am fortunate to, you know, be friends with, you know, these good creators, you know, and I try to, like, you know, even if they weren't people I knew, I would still add these books to, you know, my favorite comics of the year list, I guess.
Yeah. Thanks, Cam. I appreciate that. But I mean, that I would say practically all the books that I've read this year are from creators that I'm either friends with or got to know better this year through the podcast. So, yeah, it's, I guess going down the list, it's just going to sound like an episode list of Gutter Boys, but Desperate Pleasures is definitely up there in terms of book of the year for me. I think M.S. Harkness, that there's really no limit to what she's capable of. And
I think people are going to be talking about M.S. in 20 or 30
years. Yes, 100%, yes. Yeah. I mean, she's still really young. That's another thing, too. It's like she has two books, a bunch of shorts and zines, and that's way more than most creators, you know, twice her age, in my opinion, that I've seen.
And I mean, these books are long, 100-page-plus, yeah, you know, books.
They are proper books.
And, you know, I'm just looking at MS's process, you know, they're drawing those pages, you know, two or three times before it ends up in the book, you know? So it's just a pure workhorse. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, I guess, like, you know, to take some focus. Go ahead, JB. I'm sorry. I'll let you finish.
No. Go ahead.
List. I mean, like, you know, I'll read pretty much, like, if it's a notable book, like, I'll pretty much snatch up anything that Drawn and Quarterly or Fantagraphics puts out. You know, Moa Romanov, I think, put out that book Goblin Girl, which I've never seen anxiety played with and explored so effectively in a comic as it was in that book. I think that was a really special book. I think that also, pro tip, everybody, like, thinks that, you know, like, I just have people being like, you buy literally everything Fantagraphics puts out. I'm like, yeah, because usually in February or March, they'll do, like, a gift certificate sale, and it's, like, $2 for every one that you spend. So I'll buy, like, $200 worth of Fantagraphics gift cards once a year, and it's, like, $400 in credit, so you can get, like, every book they put out for, like, $200. So if you have extra money, I suggest investing in their Fantabucks sale once a year, because you can usually find some pretty cool shit, whether it's old stuff or new stuff.
Yeah, they put out, like, best quality books, I think, like,
yeah,
content wise mm-hmm. obviously, but, like, just the quality and love that goes into making the books is, like, a, you know, a medium and artistry all its own.
Yeah,
and I think that's why everybody wants to work there, even though you get a $1,000 advance, you know, because you know that your book's gonna look great at least.
I mean, Ad House is similar. It's all about presentation. They know how to make a book look really good. And that actually leads me to my other... No, I was saying, leading to, you know, my favorite books of the year, my buddy Matt Allison's book, Kankor, which really just kind of collects a lot of his stories that he'd done previously, plus some, I think, some new stories, too. But that book is beautiful, and it's put out by Ad House, and it's just so well done. Like, everything about that book is perfect.
And in my hands right now, it's fine.
Yeah,
I remember, amazing. Like, to, like, get the first issue, you said, like, you had to, like, send him the money, and then he would, like, mail it to you. It wasn't even, like, I don't remember. He didn't even have it set up where you, like, bought it from a store. You had to, like, you had to DM him.
Yeah.
And then he would give you a PayPal, and you would send it to him, and then he would send it out to you, yeah.
Which is a pimp move. In my opinion.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're good. You can just say, I think Kickley did something similar too with his run of zines and stuff, where he's just like, yeah, if you want to buy one, just DM me. There's no store link. There's no nothing. It's just through me. But yeah, Kankor's amazing. I'm not a big, obviously I'm not a Wednesday guy. I don't do pickups. I barely pay attention to what the big two are doing anymore. But I will say that Daniel Warren Johnson's Dead Earth is also up there in terms of like best books of the year.
I've said this on the show. I just pick up every issue of Batman and the Detective Comics just out of habit. I've been reading it for years, even when it sucks. You know, it's my way of feeling good about myself that I give my shop at least, you know, $10 a month or whatever. But I mean, I can't really think of, like, outside of that Wonder Woman book, like anything in, like, from the big two that really just, like, blew me away. Now, this is also coming from someone that, you know, prefers independent comics over that kind of stuff. But I mean, like, I feel like the stuff that's getting praised a lot, you know, is like your typical like Tom King stuff and your Donny Cates stuff. And it's just like, how many more stories can you tell about these characters that have been around for 100 years, you know, and make it interesting to a long-term comics fan? You know, like, it's a hard sell for me. You know, they brought back Batman Black and White last week, and, you know, I think that's a cool anthology. You know, I can't really, nothing like super notable. And that's not a diss, but as far as like from the big two outside of that Wonder Woman book to me, I think. I mean, maybe something, I'm missing something that I'm not thinking of, but besides that, yeah, I wasn't really interested in anything.
Yeah, and a lot of those missteps are just like bad decision making from editors, you know, like picking really bad writers and then matching them with artists that are, it's like the comic equivalent of the sitcom trope of like the disheveled ugly husband and like the beautiful wife. It's the same way with comics, especially with the big two. It's like you have this like subpar writer, let alone comic writer, and then these like pretty established or really 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 awesome artists, and there's like, you're supposed to read this, and there's like a clash where like the story's just absolutely awful, but the art's amazing. And so you just have to enjoy the art, I guess. It's just like, yeah, I guess this looks nice to look at.
Yeah. And I think with the big two specifically, I find myself, if I do go out of my way, I mean, obviously I read more than I would like at this point, just like, running a weekly interview show, I have to have guests and content, which is tough. A lot of the, like, I don't know, they're not really anthology stuff, but like this week they put out like the Very DC Very Merry Christmas or some shit. So like those are like the time, because those are like books like I don't know if they generally care about or what, but they use that as like the ability to like throw a bone to like artists and stuff. So like that one had like Jason Mason this week, or Justin Mason, sorry. I think it's fucking great, and like he got an issue in that. Or I've skewed, like, this is something we've talked a lot about on the show because I've had a lot more guests, is like they're like young adult stuff I fucking love, because whoever runs that division seems to be willing to do more, and I think that is par for, like, the actual young adult audience is more diverse and informed and are open to books that aren't drawn by Brian Hitch or something. Like, so, like, they seem to take bigger swings with it or have more fun. So I found, like, I enjoy, just in general as well, like, we were talking about the wizard, I never know how to say it,
I think they said it's just the wizard.
Yeah.
But like one of my favorite books this year was Mason Mooney Paranormal Detective, which that is like a straight kids book, but I fucking loved it. Like a great, like the layouts on the page were amazing. Like I love the style. There was like Daughters of Yis, which was a first second book. Like I find those books to be the ones that at least are trying different things, and it's because I think obviously like the YA market is fucking huge, so people are trying to like get into it as much as they can, but at least because the younger people seem to be smarter than a lot of us older people, or at least more open and diverse. Like, they're catering to that, which is actually nice. And I find, like, I'm finding way more unique and fun things, strictly fun things, which is great. Cause, like, I like when comics are fun and they seem to be doing that more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, you're definitely right. The YA market being as big as it is has allowed publishers, which are naturally risk averse, to take more chances, you know, with those titles. That being said, I think that there is, I'm a little wary with young adult books in terms of like the direction they're going and how much publishers are depending on that, because, you know, other people read books. It's not just kids. Right. And I wish they would take those risks on other projects, sure, yeah. You know, like I guess I just don't see from the editor's perspective why only YA is allowed to take risks with their stories and their art. Like, to me, that doesn't really make much sense. Like, it makes more sense if you're doing stuff like anthologies and stuff like that, because you're not 100% sure about the artist or the creative team's abilities or their consistency. Like, sure, all right, fine, give them a test run. But then again, you know, you have the book Cam was just talking about, that DC Black and White, and you have Trad Moore and J.H. Sure. Williams doing shorts in these things. Why aren't they doing full titles? That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, these are established names at this point. I don't understand that.
Yeah, and I think what it is, you know, well, I think with Trad Moore, I think that I honestly think Trad is the most visually interesting artist in mainstream comics, but yeah. I don't see that guy getting, like, a major run on a title because I feel like he doesn't fit the status quo of what those guys want at the big two right now, which sucks. Like,
well, I would say that, but he did Silver Surfer, though.
Yeah, but it was like a 5-issue miniseries.
Yeah, but that's,
you know,
that's
like,
still like, that's still its own title on a Marvel book that's getting predominant shelf space. You know, it's not like a little title on Marvel,
like,
that's like under the radar.
Well, no, I agree with that, but do you see them giving somebody like Trad Moore, like, you know, like a Tom King-esque run, like, you know, where like they'll pair up for like 50 issues of a book? Can you see them giving Trad a book like that?
Yeah, in a just world, yes.
Well, no, no, no. Yeah, I would love to see that personally. Yeah. I just don't know if they would do that.
I think his weird finger would fall off if he had to do 50 issues.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he holds his pencil very weirdly. There's a lot of artists that do that. A lot of great artists that do that. Like, James Herron holds his pencil like a weirdo.
Yeah.
Yo, that new James Herron book looks cool.
Oh, yeah.
He posted
the
some kind of like
book.
Yeah, well, no. There's like a kaiju looking book that he has. I think it's creator owned or something.
I thought it was Ultraman because it looked like Ultraman. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I think it was. Yeah, I don't know. I may have, you know, not taken in the image. I thought it was a creator owned thing. But, yeah.
It's IDW, okay. Right? Well,
I don't know.
I think
well,
I don't.
Like,
think it is.
Was it? It was like 4 pages, and was it DC? Whatever their zombie book was, and it was like him drawing Darkseid and oh fuck, what's Darkseid's whatever his lackey's name is, and it was like such a fucking tease where I was like, I was just like James Herron drawing a New Gods book would be fucking insane, and it's like, oh, okay, he gets to draw these like 4 panels, that's cool.
Are they still planning on making the New Gods a movie?
Who cares?
Well, I just think it's like, I mean, honestly, though, it's just like, I think those comics fucking rock, but like, as far as like making the New Gods a movie, you might as well just throw money in the trash. I don't think that people are gonna, if they stay true to the Kirby book, I just don't see that movie like hitting it off with like the mainstream audience is all. But
no, it's like I'm very interested in the Eternals. I feel like that's kind of like the ultimate test for like the Marvel like juggernaut that is their movie division, because like who the fuck cares, like outside of, again, the people that love, like, I love that Kirby run, I love the Gaiman John Romita Jr. one, but yeah, like, this is fucking weird characters, And I have like the weird subset interest of action figures, and those like leaked, and people were like, "Oh, these look like garbage." So, if I'm going by the Wave 1 release of Eternals figures, it's not a good start so far.
Well, I mean, going back to, you know, this idea of like a publisher, you know, quote unquote, taking a risk and putting someone like Tradmore on a book with, I don't know, a Tom King-esque familiar name. Like, it's wild to me that the big two publish so many comics every year, but it's always like the same 12 people, you know, like considering how much new talent comes out almost monthly at this point, you know, like how much amazing art there is out there, how much, how many good storytellers are out there now. It seems very bizarre that companies like Marvel and DC just want to just go down that same just like well-worn road of just the same stuff, because that's how risk averse they are.
Well, and I feel like the avenues one they have to kind of get books out, and then also like to me it would seem like you have all these characters, you have all these different scenarios to tell books, so like, you know, put a bunch of different ones out. Like if they don't work, you can cancel them. You already do that as it is, like you give books runs. But even like I know Marvel did for a bit, they were doing like the digital first stuff, and like those were like really cool unique books, like the Cary Andrews or Cary Andrews, however you pronounce it, Afu Chan Iron Fist book was like one of the coolest things they had put out in like the last 10 years, and it just saw a digital release, and then it came out, I think, in trade. But like, I mean, they have avenues to even try different stuff and see if it works. And like, they just are like, nah, never mind. Like, we'll just do, you know, 50 X-Men books.
And I think another reason why that is too, is that, and I think it's going to get worse in my opinion, because of this, is that, all these companies like, you know, Marvel, DC, they're all owned by larger entities. And in terms of like their bottom line, comics is not a priority to them. Like it is so low on the priority list for them. They just don't care. So they just let these same people make these decisions, and they're working within this like very broken system as it is. And there's no reason to change it. Why put themselves at risk in any way? So let's just do the same thing over and over again.
So two things I wanted to hit you guys with. I don't want to keep you guys for forever, but also like wanted you to be able to talk about your stuff. Like I said, Gutter Boys is probably the only I think it's the only comic book podcast I listen to. But for you as creators, kind of doing that show, like at least what are you guys looking to do in the future with it? And has doing the show as creators, have you taken anything away from that experience? Has it affected kind of your approach to comics at all doing the show?
Me personally, yes. It makes me more motivated. You know, there's some guests that we've had where, you know, I mean, I've been a fan of Katie Skelly's for years. And, you know, Katie Skelly listened to the show before she came on. And that was like, you know, that was one of those like, not necessarily like starstruck, you know, but it was just like, wow, that's cool. And that's when, you know, so for me, you know, I'm inspired by getting to talk about this on a regular basis. You know, this is something that you don't usually get to talk about with the people you interact with on a daily basis. You know, some people are lucky enough to have a cartoonist scene, but for me personally, you know, there's not many cartoonists in Louisville. And, you know, usually cartoonists have to work in isolation anyways, so you don't see your friends and family that much anyways if you're, you know, doing it semi-regularly or regularly. But as far as what we're planning on doing, you know, we're going to launch a Patreon in January, where usually we're bi-weekly, but we're going to be an every week show with every other episode on Patreon. We've got some stuff coming out for our second anniversary that we've kind of hinted at and alluded to, but
that shirt looks fucking sick.
Yeah. So, I mean, As far as, you know, getting, you know, that's going to come out. Our friend, you know, Pablo Vigo from Argentina just did his design for us. But, you know, we're going to make sure to, you know, I don't want to say too much just yet, but we got a lot of stuff coming in the next couple months to kind of ramp up our 2-year anniversary celebration, I guess. But I guess it's like in a kind of weird way, as far as like work wise, I feel a lot more pressure to create comics because I feel like the show has given me more of an audience than I had before from people that just listen to the show. And I feel like a pressure to create for the audience now, whereas I never really felt like not to say that I didn't have much of an audience, but I didn't interact with my audience as much.
Like, for you guys as creators, like, what has the year been like for you, and what do you guys have? I know Cam, you mentioned like a Kickstarter this coming year. I mean, what do you guys have planned for the future kind of stuff you're working on?
Yeah, I've got a couple anthologies that I'll be in, and then the Kickstarter is for an anthology, and then I've got a solo book coming out. This is the first year, 2020, the first year I didn't put out a comic since 2013, I think, so it was kind of weird. I did like 2 or 3 in 2019 too, so it's, you know, it was a big change of pace for me. Yeah, I've got some stuff I'm working on right now. I can't really talk about a lot of it yet, but I'll have a new book out and 2 strips and anthologies like spring, early summer.
Yeah, I've been working on a couple of different projects. I mean, I still have my wrestling clothing thing called Hardway, so I've been working on that periodically. And then I did a 9 or 10 page short that I don't know if it'll get published or if it's strictly digital or for promotional purposes. I'm not 100% sure. That was, strictly speaking, just like what do you call it? Fuck. just a gig. It was just a job, basically. And then I have another short that I finished that'll be in an anthology by Really Easy Press called 666.
Oh shit.
And that should be coming out, I think, at the end of the month, maybe sooner.
Yeah. I'm gonna be in issue 2 of that. That's one of the anthologies, and I'm supposed to have my shit done by the end of January. So yeah,
you can do that.
No, I definitely will. It's just, yeah. So yours will probably be out super soon if my deadline's in January.
Yeah, I had that done. I think the initial deadline was like early October, and then, you know, with COVID and all of the protesting and stuff like that, it kind of became less of a priority, but it's back on track to being printed. I believe it's being printed as we speak right now by Eric.
Hell yeah.
And that has a lot of great artists. I know Sage is going to be in it. A bunch of other friends of ours are going to be in it. So that was fun. I think it's like, 666 is the idea is it's 6 creators, and each creator does a 6-page story, and each page has 6 panels, so they're all uniform in terms of like layout.
And there's a 1-word prompt for each story.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So the theme for issue 1 will be sleep.
And I think I don't even know if I'm allowed to say this, but issue 2 is blood.
Yeah, Eric's gonna be mad now.
Yeah.
Just kidding. And then, like Cam had mentioned earlier, me and Eric have our book Daikaiju Team Alpha, and issue 2 was done, so that's out there. We're currently in the early stages of working on issue 3 and 4 and plotting that out. And we've actually had that plotted out for a while now, but we kind of have to refine it and tighten things up. And then I'm also working on a project that I can't really talk about. It's a pitch. So, you know, but I'm working on that with Brian Level. So, oh, nice. and he's an amazing guy, artist, writer. He wears many hats now. So I'm really excited to get a chance to work with him on that.
Are you all both drawing that? I haven't asked you too much about that.
No, I'm drawing it, which was funny to me because Because, you know, he was showing me pages for another project that's not related to this one, but has some similar aesthetic to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking at those new pages, I was like, why do you want me to draw this again? you could do this yourself and it'd be like 1,000 times better. But Brian's a really sweet dude and he's been wanting to work on something. So this was a good time to do it. And yeah. And then I also have some things. I mean, I don't know if Cam, did you mention the Gutter Boys magazine?
Yeah, I said we were doing an anthology. So yeah, we'll talk about it. We're going to be doing a Kickstarter and we are starting a magazine called Gutter. It's going to be different creators in each issue. Probably not themes, just creators we like. Maybe themes, who knows. The first issue is not really themed. It's just some members of the Gutter Gang and some cool additions that we're going to announce on our social media and on the show as it gets closer to the time.
That's fucking awesome. That is exciting.
Yeah, I started working on it before the pandemic, to be honest. Then the pandemic happened, like, because I was planning on, you know, touring with it. Well, not touring, but, you know, hitting the show circuit with it this year, like in the summer and fall. But so a lot of the stories are done, couple of, you know, waiting on a couple, you know, additions. But yeah, it should be pretty fun.
Yeah. And I think that it'll tie in with sort of what we have planned for the podcast as well, in terms of starting a Patreon and, you know, providing more content for people that do want to donate to the Patreon to help us, you know, fund this thing of ours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cam not walking dogs is gonna be doing that shit.
Yeah. Oh, if we could live off of Patreon, man. Oh,
that'd be the dream.
God.
Are you kidding me?
I'm hoping we make like $200.
Yeah, right. Yeah. My expectations are very low, by the way. You know. Well, there's, I mean, like our podcast is not it, I don't think our podcast is reached that size of an audience yet to really realistically live off of that yet.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, we've done this for almost 2 years now, right?
Yeah.
And I will say that within the last year, likely because of COVID, because no one else is doing anything, our audience has grown.
Yeah.
So I guess that is one positive of all this horrible shit.
There's one podcast I listen to, and I have subscribed to their Patreon, and they make like, it's like fucking $18,000 a month or something ridiculous.
Are you talking about Chapo or?
No, they make like $100,000 plus
a
month.
Oh, okay. I forget how much they make, honestly. I try not to think about it.
It's like the Talking Simpsons podcast where they just talk about Simpsons and cartoons and shit. And
that's not the Australian guys, right?
No, they're they used to be like in the games industry.
Okay.
If I made $1,000 a month off Patreon, I would nut in my pants every night.
Are you kidding? Oh my god! And I would let everyone know that I'm nutting my pants.
Yeah,
just underwear filled to the brim, posting it online.
Could be that, yeah, like with your receipt of your payment every month.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Make sure you're nutting.
My god.
I heard. I'll just say. Apparently. Chester Brown posted a dick pic on his Patreon.
Now, that's the kind of content I'm looking for. That's a pimp move.
Yeah.
Just showing your backers your penis.
You paid for this.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing.
That's how you assert dominance. You get that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Give them a little taste so they come back for more.
Yeah, but like this is, again, because I for the podcast, I like I said, I enjoy and I am there for kind of the thoughtfulness and the introspectiveness of the industry, but additionally being like a fan of you guys as artists, like that is exciting. I think kind of the work that JB does is insanely unique. I enjoy that style and the kineticness of it and the energy. I think Cam stuff I want to see fucking more of. I don't have like any, I've never f- been able to get any physical stuff, so like I would am fucking excited that that is going to be an option, because I think, again, kind of two very unique and kind of distinct voices that I want to get more of. So kind of, even if the podcast is an avenue for you guys to be able to do that, like, it's fucking exciting and a real kind of again, positive of the year, I think.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah,
I
mean, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I don't. Tim usually has a garbage last question. I won't give you guys
that. You can come up with a garbage question. That sounds.
And if you can't, just ask our listeners, because we get fucking tons of them.
Oh yeah,
just they'll trash definitely give questions. You some fodder.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus.
I do want to know.
Reap what you sow, right?
Yeah.
What did JB end up with out of NECA this year with the turtles? What was your final?
Oh yeah. For this year alone, oh man. Well, I was in trouble this year because I don't know if you know this or if any of your listeners even care about this, because they shouldn't. But NECA has the Ninja Turtles license and has had it for like about a year or two now. So well,
I
they've
bring it
been
up any chance I can. Yeah. So
oh, awesome. Okay. Well then perfect. And,
I'm going to go ahead and leave the call. Is that cool?
All right. Yeah. Yeah. No,
I'm joking.
Out.
I'm joking.
And so now that the losers are gone, we can talk about action figures for fellas. the Ninja Turtle stuff has kind of gone off the rails, 'cause they're doing movie turtle stuff, which I never in my life would I expect a toy company to make toys based on the 1990 Ninja Turtles movie. Like, that just seems so wild to me. So they have that, and then they have a whole line of figures based solely on the cartoon, the Fred Wolf cartoon, and then they have another line separate of that that's all dedicated to the arcade games. So combining all those together, yeah, I'm fucked. Like, I am truly fucked.
Are you paying eBay prices? Because I know that you're...
No.
Okay.
No. I think I've done that a handful of times, but I try to avoid it because fuck that. Sorry, what were you saying?
So have you ended up with... Because every time, too, I'm like, all right, well, I don't really need the Triceraton 2 back. Like, I have, like, a fleeting remembrance of that episode, and it's like I like the comic one and stuff like that, and then like I'm in Target and I see it and I'm like, oh fuck, and then so now I have like I got the Triceraton 2 bag, I got the Triceraton with the Roadkill Rondies.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
every time
army
like,
builders
I don't need, yeah, I'm like I don't need that, and then I seen it and now I got all this fucking shit.
Were you able to find them at stores?
Yeah, I found the Triceraton and Roadkill in the store, and then I
That's
was lucky
surprising.
Enough to get the Target app. I got the 2-pack, although I've seen like a shit ton of them in store so far.
Wow. Yeah, I've had zero luck in here or any nearby city for the most part. Like they're just nothing. It's all scalpers here.
And I literally go to Target once a week to look for cards, and I check out the toy aisle looking for these turtle toys for JB, and I've never seen a single one.
Yeah, they just don't exist.
Shit,
it's just scalpers.
Because
the Midwest full of scalpers.
Yeah. If I'll check out tomorrow. If I see, do you want the Triceraton 2 back?
Yes, because as you were saying, I don't really need a Triceraton pack, and I was like, I need five of them. You know, like just really deranged thinking on my part.
Yeah. If I see one tomorrow, I'll check tomorrow. If I see it, I'll grab it.
Thank you. Yeah, like, that would be a huge help. Yeah, because that was actually one of the times that I had to cave in to scalpers. I think I paid like retail. They're what, 55, 60, something like that.
Yeah. Well, Target now too is they have the. This is like as nerdy as the fucking shit. Like, because they have the. You spend. $50.
Oh, I know exactly what deal you're referring to.
Yeah, I pre-ordered all the fucking that recent wave. Was it the Hickman X-Men wave or something? They did,
oh, I did see that. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm not a Marvel Legends guy.
I'm specifics. I do it, and then I just got the Lightning Collection. They put out the pumpkin wrapper,
yep.
And They just had those Sphinx. In stores. Yeah, so the other day I bought both of those and the Gremlins Santa. It's a fucking problem.
It's a disease. It's really a disease.
Yeah. I think collecting is a disease in general.
Oh, yeah. It is. It is a legit 100%. Addiction where, like, because it will say, like, I don't need this. I don't need this at all. I'm not going to order And then I see it in store, and, like, it's like a blackout haze where I'm at the register. Like, how the fuck did all these get in my cart? And then I got to hide them from my wife when I come in.
Yeah, yeah. I have, to give you sort of like a picture into my mind, I'm not a huge, like, Friday the 13th fanboy. I know there's a very specific type of horror fan that is. And I yet somehow still have four of the Jasons that they produced out of the six they've made. Why? I don't know. I really don't. I don't know why. I cannot answer that question for you.
Well, it's like a weird where I think once you get into it as well. So like with the NECA stuff, like it is. I try to explain it to my wife. It's like, and it's like cards. It's weird that you bring that up because my best friend, who's like my cousin, we've been like lifelong friends. Me and him started recording something together that we're working on, and then we're gonna drop. He's into card collecting, like NBA cards.
Cam's
what a fucking racket, man.
Yeah, so his weird. There's like that, you know, thing where I go to the store to look for NECA things, and I see like five guys they're always there in the card section, like all sitting together, talking, waiting. So like I do the same thing when I go looking for the NECA stuff. I'm like checking out to see if there's a card, but there's always this like, it's like five guys that are always, they have a circle around it. Like you can't even get in there to do it. But it is like that weird, like, so like I only use Facebook now for on the bus groups and action figure groups. And it's like,
yeah,
because then I see like deals posted and I'm like, well, $20 for a Storm collectible Marcus Fenix. I don't even like Marcus Fenix, but like, that's a deal. Like,
they're basically giving it to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'll customize that. I'm not gonna customize that.
Amazing. Like, yeah. Do you know how long I was grappling with myself about buying? Because like they had a Black Friday sort of sale thing that went on for a little longer than the weekend. But they were selling the Mattel Indominus Rex, and it's like retail for 40. They were selling, or no, 45, I think, for retail. And it was on sale for 20. And I was staring at it for 3 days straight. Like, I do not need this. I don't even like the movie. Why do I want this? And it's only because it was for $20.
Yeah. I have plenty of, especially Power Rangers. Like, I was like, I only collect the main ones, the ones that interest me, or the like, cool designs or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, there's like a GameStop sale where I can get that Red Ranger 2-pack for $18. Oh, cool. And then I'm just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to sit there.
Yeah. Just going to sit on a shelf or in a box somewhere.
Did you get any of the Super 7 stuff?
Yeah. I haven't gotten them yet because I ordered through Big Bad. And
I did the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, so it's stashed away in their warehouse, but yeah, I've basically signed up for all the waves at this point, just maxing out my credit card like an idiot.
Yeah, I got that. This is the last one. I got the Abe Sabian sent in my what do they call it? The shit, loot.
I know the company you're thinking of that did the.
Oh no, the big bag. Big bag. They do the where they don't ship it until you want it all shipped.
Yeah, pile of loot.
Pile of loot, yeah. So, like, I have it. I'm just, like, waiting for something else to come in so I can get this, like, Abe Sabian shipped to me. Because I was like, I don't want just that. So now I'm just, like, checking email every day. Like, something else come in, please, so I can get this fucking...
Yeah, it's Abe very Sabian. Strategic derangement that we have.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a good way to alienate all listeners of the podcast. But, for anyone that wants to check out all your guys' stuff, like what is both podcast and the comic stuff, how can they do that?
Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
You can go ahead.
Alrighty. I'm just at Cam Del Rosario, all one word, no spaces, on Twitter and Instagram. As far as our show, it's at Gutter Boys Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We're pretty active on social media and post a lot of dumb shit. And, we drop episodes every other Monday, and then starting in January with our Patreon, if you're a subscriber, you'll get episodes every week. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm at Mort Crimp Jr. on Instagram and Twitter, and I also have a website, jbrowe.com. And if you like wrestling stuff, you can go to hardwayltd.com or at hardwayltd. And yeah, that's pretty much all I have to plug right now.
Did I say the show is called Gutter Boys?
Oh, yeah, we have a podcast called Gutter Boys, by the way, yeah.
Like I said, if you, and I'm like, I never, we're really terrible at promoting the show in any form of media. But we're at pages_panels. I'm always feel like it's, you don't stumble upon comic book podcasts. Like, I don't think anyone's ever been like, oh, what's this? Like, it's, I think if you are listening to a comic book podcast, you probably know where we're located. But, I think if you do listen to this show at all in any form, like Gutter Boys is like this, like, but like better. So I would highly suggest go listening to them. Like I said, I love both of you guys' work. So anything you can get a hands on from either of them is worth your time and effort. So I really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk. Again, I know, especially as creators, and then you guys also running a podcast, time is limited, so I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having us again. And, you know, your podcast will probably be around longer than ours, because I think we're like one episode away from cancellation.
Yeah, to be fair, yeah.
I'm also, I love, like, the aggressiveness. Like, I know you guys like, I think it's smart, like character wise, like you guys are like some of the best follows on Twitter. Just the aggressiveness, and then I wish we were able to be as aggressive. But Tim's like, we gotta like get people on the show weekly, so
he's always like, yeah, we somehow managed to get guests and listeners despite our own shortcomings and whatnot. So
yeah.
We got Dimitri Logothetis, so I don't know. PR people clearly don't listen to, like, they don't check the show whatsoever. Like, that guy was, like, real excited to be on the show. And we're like, why? Like, you fucking listen to the show? Like, you're a director of a Nicolas Cage movie. Like, you have no idea. I felt bad for that dude. Like, so the week we dropped that was, like, the week we're allowed to drop it. And, like, all his other interviews went up, and they were all, like, 8-minute things, because again, he's a director of a movie. Again, not like a well-renowned director, but you know, he directs movies, that's fine. And we had to do on there for like 50 minutes. I was like, oh fuck, I don't think he signed up for a 50-minute conversation with two fucking nerds. But yeah, like I said, this is the Page and Panel Show. Definitely go check out Gutter Boys. Can't express how much I appreciate you guys taking the time to come on and talk about it. And next time when Tim's back, we will definitely get back to covering George Lopez at some point in our year long effort to do so.
One can hope.
Yeah, one of these days.